It's time to talk to one of my favorite people ever. He is the reason the Atlantic Coast Conference is profitable. He is the voice of the ACC. He is Wes Durham, and he joins us on the Adam Gold Show. You're also the voice of the Atlanta Falcons. Don't shake your head. You know it's all true.
How about not associating me with the league in revenue right now, okay? How about let's just keep that?
That's okay. Look, okay. The people complaining about the schedule, like, what did they think it was going to be?
17 teams, man. Mass hard. What do you want me to tell you?
I mean, it's nutty. I open up Elon Musk's website, and all these people are complaining about the ACC schedule. I'm like, these are the trade-offs you make for money.
Exactly. This is what you do when you expand. And excuse me here because I'm getting a text about potential new quarterbacks for the Minnesota Vikings who are here in Atlanta on Sunday. My other job has kicked in here for a minute.
Could be Jameis Winston, no?
It could be. Could be a lot of people. Montez Sweat to Chicago.
Yeah.
The Commanders would not trade him to Atlanta where he's from. So Atlanta signed the former NC State star Kentavious Street yesterday.
I know, very
excited.
Got him in a
trade.
Yep, from Philadelphia.
Kind of excited about that. Yeah, looking for that. So I'm trying to see if the Vikings have, in fact, made a Jameis Winston move.
And they said they're not trading, Hunter either, the defensive end.
Yeah, Danielle Hunter, they're not going to move him.
Right.
But I will say the interesting part about this NFL trade deadline has kind of become like that NBA free agency thing in July, right? It's kind of become that weird, like, 9-hour period, except there's a rush here. It's almost like, it's like when the transfer window closes in the Premier League. You and I always end up on Premier League.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, I think trade deadlines are pretty interesting, and Atlanta made the one move I thought. Now I'm waiting to see if Minnesota makes a move ahead of their visit here Sunday, so I apologize.
No, it's quite all right, man. But all have things to do.
All right, let me go back to the math here on the league real quick, Adam.
Sure.
Look. If there are two schools that ought to be sideways a little bit here, one being Georgia Tech because they've been in the league damn near 50 years, okay? So, and I worked there for 18. And to me, the Georgia Tech-Clemson thing is a thing. Now, Georgia Tech without a permanent opponent, if you will, I get it and I understand it. The math and the geography work a little different here. And we're planning this thing for 7 years. We're not planning it for 30. So there is that. And actually I'm surprised we planned it for 7. I thought we would only short term this because
that's optimistic given the way certain schools feel.
Yeah. I mean, so with all that being said, I would offer you this. I was probably more surprised there weren't 9 league games in this. Because I thought that would have been a little bit more of a generator, maybe from dollars and cents, but there's smarter people that can answer that question for me. But I don't know. Carolina, Duke, Wake, NC State all have to be relatively pleased with the way this all happened. Clemson, I think they're good playing Florida State. I've heard from some Clemson fans this morning that wanted to play Georgia Tech. It's been a good series. It's been a long series. But nonetheless, we got Virginia Tech Miami back in this, which I thought was important that we lost in the 3-5-5.
Right.
And in all honesty, I give John Waldhack and this subcommittee that have Bubba Cunningham and Carla Williams and the AD at Cal on it. I give them credit with working with Michael Strickland that you don't go to the West Coast more than 3 times in the first 7 years. That's a pretty good trade out.
Yeah.
Given what it could have been. Potentially in some of the models that you just draw up on airplane napkins when you fly, but maybe that's just me.
It was always going to be hard, and hopefully they'll be dealing with the same teams in this league for the next dozen years. I mean, that would be the best case, and I know Florida State and Clemson and maybe North Carolina don't want to hear it. I think the best place for them and their programs is right here, but they all have dollar signs, and I get it, but I guess money can buy you happiness, although I've never tried it, Wes.
Yeah, I haven't either yet. So, willing to learn, as they say. Yeah.
All right, so a couple of weeks ago, it's been a while since you and I have spoken. A couple of weeks ago, we were sitting here, and I'm thinking, my gosh, there's no reason why we don't get to November and North Carolina is in the top 6 of the college football playoff, And had Duke just stopped Sam Hartman on 4th and 16, Duke might have been, people think I'm nuts, Duke might have been involved in that
Absolutely.
Conversation as well.
No question.
And then it all fell apart, Wes. Yeah. What happened to North Carolina? That's really more troubling.
You know, I'm not sure that I've got, and I've had obviously the Tar Heels Saturday night in Atlanta yeah. against Georgia Tech. And shout out to all the Carolina fans that thought I was homing for Georgia Tech. really? I am of the belief that Carolina's defensive punch, which has been there, okay? It's mm-hmm. not like it's not arrived this year. I think Carolina's a little worn down on that side of the ball, Adam.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't stop Virginia when it counted, nor Georgia Tech when it counted, although Georgia Tech has shown some ability to play offense.
They have, but North Carolina did all the right things on offense to win the game, okay?
Yeah.
But defensively, Cedric Gray, Power Echols, Kamen Rucker, good bit of that secondary, some of those guys up front played a lot more football than I think anybody wanted them to Saturday night. Their depth on that side of the ball was troubling because those guys were out there for, what is it, 80-some plays that that Georgia Tech mm-hmm. ran in the game. And when Buster Faulkner found the rhythm and the tempo, the Jackets offensive coordinator with Haynes King, and certainly Dante Smith back in the lineup for the first time in five games, you know, all of a sudden Georgia Tech had some momentum. And then the one play you couldn't afford to have happen happened. The throw to Tez Walker and the hit Ooh. by King
yeah.
and the fumble recovery by KJ Wallace was Carolina's last gasp. If Carolina goes down the field on that possession and scores, I think we have an entirely different landscape for the ending. But that didn't happen. So, you know, when the scenario played itself out that way, Carolina couldn't get the ball back because they couldn't get a stop.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, I hate it for Carolina that it's gone in two snaps. Now, I will say this. They play Campbell on Saturday, and then they jump back in with Duke and mm-hmm. that kind of thing, right? I will offer you this. Carolina is still in this somehow, but they need – they don't play Louisville, but they need Louisville to lose. They need as many in the two column as they can get.
Right.
And Carolina right now, you know, they had the tiebreaker on Miami. Miami's obviously in Raleigh on Saturday. Carolina will be pulling for state then, one of those unique, you know, neighborhood things that happens every once in a while.
Right.
They get Duke. Mm-hmm. They then get they don't play Virginia Tech.
No,
this
they
year,
they play Clemson and Virginia Tech's adorable. I'm just going to leave
Clemson,
it at that.
Clemson, I can't figure that out either. And
I can.
Well, I can figure it out. It's not pretty, but you can figure it out. Clemson is a victim of its own success. The standard is so damn high.
Clemson needed Louisville's schedule this year.
They did, and Clemson also needs the same thing they needed a year ago and didn't get, and that is they need people who can make plays in the secondary.
There's no difference makers.
From a receiving standpoint.
Yeah. There are no difference makers on the outside.
That's it.
I think Will Shipley is also kind of apt. You say Carolina's defense is worn out. I saw Shipley take so many big hits.
Yeah.
Like, in a way, I don't know if Will Shipley was a legitimate or is a legitimate NFL prospect. But
right.
the amount of contact he has had to absorb at
sure.
Clemson might completely ruin his opportunity to make a living, a really good living playing football.
Yeah.
What did you make of Dabo's? We're going to play. For people who haven't heard it yet,
God.
Dabo did a call-in show. I can't believe that coaches take calls anymore.
I can't either.
I can't believe it.
Well, and I'm going to share something with you. I've been gone 10 years from Georgia Tech, okay? And we almost stopped taking calls in 2011.
Yeah.
My second to last year doing the games. And at that time, there were six schools in the ACC that weren't taking calls.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think there are – I think Dabo Swinney, of the coaches that still have shows left.
Right.
I'm going to tell you this. I think Dabo Swinney may be one of three or less coaches in the ACC that take calls.
Why?
And by the way, he is by far and away the, nationally in Power Five of coaches that have won 150 or more games, however many he's won. I mean, Nick Saban takes a call.
He does.
I think.
He does. Nick Saban does take calls, yeah.
I don't know anybody. I don't. Why? And better still, and I will say this in the – and I'm okay with what Dabo said. I want that out front too.
Yeah.
I'm okay with what Dabo said, and here's why, Adam. He deserves – any coach in this business right now, with the landscape the way it is, they ought to be able to say whatever they want to say whenever they want to say it. And you know why? Because it's really hard.
Oh, yeah.
It's really hard, and I don't think the fan – in some cases has an inkling of how difficult it is just to win the game, let alone run the program. Second part of this is there is a theory building among coaches, Adam,
mm-hmm.
that they have to make their voice heard more now because of what some believe is a bias towards certain aspects of college football right now.
Meaning there's too much of a lean towards the player?
Or certain conferences.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Or certain attitudes and approaches. Now, I've heard people say this is the Deion factor. I've heard people say you can add the Deion thing into it. This is layer after layer after layer after layer of what college football's been through in the last 4 years, in my opinion.
Wes Durham is with us here. First of all, we're going to play like the greatest hits of that Dabo response to Tyler, wherever
from
Tyler
Spartanburg.
Was from Spartanburg.
Yeah.
That happened last night. But do you remember?
If he could have been from like Fair Play or 96 or Shiraw, Greeleyville, any of my favorite little spots in the road that I've pass through going to play golf at the beach, any of those.
My gosh. It was, first of all, I agree with what your point that Dabo can say that. But the only counter to that is that beefing down is always probably better to be left alone, right? Because that's what I used to argue all the time with my former partner that Philip Rivers screaming at fans mm-hmm. was just a losing proposition. Like, just let it go. But I understand also the human emotion of it. And Dabo started off slow and then worked his way into it, which I appreciate. And it reminded me of Dabo's Steve Spurrier rant from 2011. We're also going to play part of that because you remember Dabo tweet that. The tweet that from Dabo Swinney towards Steve Spurrier was, chef's kiss beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to play both of those coming up in about a half hour because I'm devoting an entire segment to Dabo from last night. But the reason why everybody is so mad is because Dabo went into this season basically insisting that last year was last year. We're back and everybody bought it. We're preseason number, 8? In the country?
Yeah, 10, 8 or 10, depending on your poll. Yeah.
They have a better chance of missing a bowl game than winning 8 games.
That's it.
I mean, and part of it is the schedule. And they lost to Duke in the opener. They have lost some games. They probably think, we probably should have won. They have Notre Dame this week. They still have to play North Carolina. They're going to South Carolina at the end of the season. I mean, this could really get bad for Dabo Swinney.
It could be 5-7.
Yeah. 5-7. Which is just remarkable to me. But that's the world. That's the new world of college football. How back is Florida State, Wes? You've seen them.
They're back. They're back.
That was not convincing. You didn't convince me just now.
Well, they're back enough that they're going to be in the discussion all the way to the end. Look, they were surgical on Saturday in Winston-Salem. They knew they were better and played like they were better. Now, are they Shade Tree Jones and Raynard Wilson and Andre Wadsworth and, Samari Rolled and all those cats? Adam, good on defense. Maybe not that good, but they're pretty. I mean, they're better than Danny Cannell, Florida State. I mean, you know, Warrick Dunn and I were flying together over the weekend back from Nashville after the football game.
What a player.
Yeah, and Warrick Dunn says, look, are you kidding me? They got as many running backs in the stable as we had. They've got – they're as good probably in the offensive line as a majority of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
And their quarterback play has been really, really good. And I think they have got the firepower and the defensive mentality to go win the thing. And here's the deal. I think the Big 12, I guess, is still technically alive. I think Washington is the Pac-12's only hope at this point. And I think Michigan and Ohio State are going to knock one another out somehow. And Florida State, if they tend to their knitting, is going to get into the playoff. Because I do believe Georgia and Alabama are going to end up on the SEC side with maybe Ole Miss having a chance or Tennessee having a chance. But at the end of the day, I think Florida State's a top four team, and I think Florida State is going to represent the league pretty well in the championship. Now, I will say that I've teed all this up to say that anybody can beat anybody in the landscape of today's college football.
Right.
Anybody. I mean, Cal damn near beat Southern California last week.
Mm-hmm. No, Southern Cal still hasn't figured out the defensive part of this.
Well, okay, now. I mean, I don't disagree with that either. But I think that, you know, we are in a time of cataclysmic upsets in college football, and we have to understand that the landscape right now is pretty volatile every Saturday when they play.
This actually would be a pretty good year for the 12-team playoff. I think this could be
a... it'd be an excellent year. Well, the fist fight would be at the back end of the 12, which is what we're going to have anyway.
Yeah.
But in all reality, I think you're right. I think that in some ways the lines here are going to get cut between one and twos, and I think you'll see that tonight. The one thing, by the way, it's not going to surprise me tonight, is that Georgia's not number one,
right,
and Florida State's out of the top four. That will not surprise me either way.
Jerry Palm said Georgia will be number five.
Five?
Yep.
Wow. Okay, where does he think Florida State will be?
I think he had Florida State at four, three or four.
Okay, and who's won? Ohio State with the two
Ohio
wins?
State won, Michigan two, Florida State three, and I think he had Washington four. I think Oregon is still very much in play, and because it's the SEC, I think whoever, like Georgia with one loss might still get a bid because the schedule you play only matters if you're not a Georgia or an Alabama. That's the only time it matters. Or Michigan, for that matter. It doesn't matter that you haven't played anybody if you're one of those teams.
Okay, let me ask you two questions then, just as a general daily follower of this. If Georgia loses to one-loss Alabama and Atlanta in the SEC title, do two SEC teams go?
They lose to one-loss Alabama, so they both end up 12-1. There's a good chance of that, yes. It all depends on how it shakes out. I don't think a 13-0 Florida State team would lose out, and I don't think an undefeated,
Michigan or Ohio State would
Washington.
Lose out.
I don't think
what
they
would happen
lose
to
out.
What would happen to undefeated Washington then?
Then both SEC teams wouldn't go. Then the champion might go in that case. But I just don't think Georgia with one loss.
Could we get that moment by chance? A moment where the Pac-12 champion goes ahead of the number two SEC team?
Mwah!
The Sankey Entertainment Channel would be fascinating.
Paul Feinbaum's head would explode.
Oh, my God. How would Greenberg conduct a show? He might actually have to get somebody from the ACC network to appear on it.
Well, you might. That's right. Are you? You're not available. You're too big.
I'm the game caller now. Don't do a show anymore.
They could dig Roddy up.
Roddy would be excellent on that show.
He'd be awesome. What isn't Roddy Jones good at?
Oh, Roddy Jones is good at everything.
I understand.
Looking forward to being in Raleigh on Saturday, by the way.
Good luck. Have fun with the Wolfpack and the Hurricanes.
We are excited to be there, and I love Carter Finley at night.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't. Last time I was at Carter Finley at night was, I don't want to bring that up to the Wolfpack fans. They might not be very friendly in the parking lot.
Oh, man. All right.
Well, that was that Chuck Amato team that was going to the Fiesta Bowl. Let me just put it to you. It's the last time I was at Carter-Finley at night.
Wes Durham, you're the best, man. I appreciate your time.